When you hear about women seeking the power to make decisions over their own bodies, it's easy to assume you're hearing talk about some other country. But there are plenty of people in America, especially people with darker skin or less money or both, who seek a level of control that many women take for granted. In short, they seek reproductive justice. The term itself, reproductive justice, was coined more than 20 years ago, and it includes the concept of pro-choice, but a whole lot more as well. It'll be discussed Friday at a public session organized by the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and we have the facilitators with us. Tony M. Bond Leonard is co-founder and former president of Black Women for Reproductive Justice and past board president of Sister Song Women of Color Reproductive Justice Collective. Ms. Leonard, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, and good morning. Glad to be here.
Good to have you here. Loretta Ross is with us as well. She is an author and activist and co-founder and past national coordinator of Sister Song. Ms. Ross, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on your show. And it's my birthday. I need to add that.
Oh, happy birthday, Loretta Ross. Thanks for telling us about that. So let's start with you then, because apparently you were both present at the construction of the actual term reproductive justice. What were you seeking to do by coming up with a term?
Well, it came up in discussions about health care reform because Hillary Clinton was leading President Clinton's effort to reform health care. And what we noticed was that they were omitting reproductive health care from health care, which really didn't make sense because reproductive health care is the main reason women first go to the doctor. And so we found that we needed to discuss what did we want from reproductive health care. And then we realized that abortion was actually being isolated from all the other reproductive health care issues that affect women's lives and all the economic and social justice issues that affect women's lives. So we spliced together reproductive rights in social justice to come up with reproductive justice.
When you say abortion was isolated, was it just, it simply could not be on the table in any way, shape, or form as part of the discussion about reproductive health?
I think so, because the Republicans in Congress at the time were adamantly opposed to including anything around abortion in health care reform. But what that caused the Democrats to do was take all of reproductive health care off the table for fear that it would excite the opposition. Except that when they took reproductive health care off the table, they really ended up designing a health care platform that was mainly designed for men. And so we wanted to push back at that as Black women and say, no, you cannot take reproductive health care off the table unless you're only talking about health care for men.
And obviously that health care reform effort failed early in the Clinton administration. I mean, was there some level of relief at that because of the way it had eliminated women's reproductive health?
I don't think we're ever relieved when healthcare fails because we so badly needed it in this country. Sometimes people argue that a half of apple is better than no apple at all. I kind of like a full apple, but sometimes you have to settle for the half apple you can get at that time. We wouldn't have been overjoyed that it failed, but we really wanted the whole apple.
Tony M. Bond Leonard, I was looking at some of the work done at the Black Women for Reproductive Justice. I mean, and it goes way beyond abortion. Give us an idea of the broad scope of what reproductive justice encompasses.
Well, that's the beauty of reproductive justice, because reproductive justice isn't just about abortion, but it is about the totality of women's lives. It is about women having access to the full range of contraceptives. It's about women being able to have access to all the social and economic supports they need to raise their children. It's about well woman care. It's about, as Loretta said, that when we sat down and talked about what reproductive justice looked like, it went well beyond abortion. And even within the context of abortion, there were a couple of us who worked at Planned Parenthood. I worked at an abortion fund at the time. And we knew that before women could even get access to abortion, there were all of these other issues that they were confronting. They may have been in a domestically violent relationship. They also were needing access to abortion and needed money to get a safe abortion. And so there were all of these other issues tied to how women were even able to get abortion services and needing access to abortion providers who were in their area. So reproductive justice was about so much more than just abortion, and when we were talking about what even needed to go into the universal health plan that was being proposed, we were thinking about or thinking through a lens of the unique issues that were confronting Black women. And we were even thinking about the fact that it didn't include, it talked about well woman care, but it didn't take into consideration, for instance, how Black women were being targeted for coerced and forced methods of contraceptives because, of course, Black women were thought to be women who overpopulated. And so we had all of these things in mind as we were talking about reproductive justice.
Tony M. Bond Leonard and Loretta Ross are our guests on the Jefferson Exchange, present at the birth of the term reproductive justice and working for it for more than two decades now. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Ms. Leonard, I want to come back to this concept of the access to the full range of contraceptives you mentioned a couple times now. I mean, what is lacking or had been lacking in the areas where you were trying to focus on reproductive justice? What contraceptives were not available and why?
Specifically, there were two contraceptives that were out during the time we came together. One was a method called Norplant. Norplant came in the form of, the first version came in the form of six silicone matchsticks that were implanted underneath the skin of the upper arm of women. And it was a long-acting method of contraceptives that had to be inserted by the doctor, by a provider, and could not be taken out. And so what we were seeing was a large number of women, especially Black women, who were having these adverse reactions to this form of contraceptive. One being going into forms of premature menopause, hair loss, weight gain, headaches, all of these symptoms, and not being able to find a provider to take them out, particularly poor women of color. We were also seeing the same thing with another method called Defopravera, which is a 3-month injection that women receive. Again, long-acting, provider-controlled. And women were being coerced into getting this method of contraception because it was thought that women of color, especially Black women, aren't able to control their fertility and needed a way to have their fertility controlled for them. And so the other piece that was very problematic about these two methods was that they did not prevent the transmission of sexually transmitted infections like herpes, like gonorrhea, like HIV. In addition, there were other methods that were out, but those methods were not really being pushed towards women, or women weren't being given the full option of or the full menu of methods of contraceptives that were available to them. And these two particular methods were being pushed upon them because they were methods that could be used to control women's fertility rather than as a method that women could use to control their own fertility.
So essentially different doors again. If you're a person of color, you go through the door, you get these kinds of birth control, the kind that you can't affect. And if you're not a woman of color, you get a different kind of birth control that you can affect.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Loretta.
And I just want to add one thing. It was free to get Norplant, those six silicone rods inserted, but cost $800 to get them out.
Really? Wow.
Right, and we were seeing women who were trying to take them out themselves. That was how desperate women were becoming to get the Norplant out because they were experiencing such adverse side effects from the Norplant. There were women who were actually using razor blades to try and cut the silicone matchsticks out of their arms and take them out themselves.
We're talking about reproductive justice with Tony M. Bond, Leonard, and Loretta Ross. They'll be appearing at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in a session on Friday at 11 a.m. at Carpenter Hall about reproductive justice. You can join us now on the Jefferson Exchange. You may have questions or comments or stories to share. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. From reading about the work of both of your organizations and others involved in reproductive justice, Loretta, I get the sense that information even on pregnancy or conception or menstruation can be kind of hard to come by in poor and communities of color.
Well, it's hard to come by for a number of reasons. First of all, we all know about the digital divide. Just some communities don't have proper and full access to the internet, and so much of our information is available digitally. And, you know, we no longer get the newspapers or the magazines. And then some people simply are afraid to access information if they live in very conservative households that prohibit information on sex and sexuality. Well, even if you have access, do you have to hide the fact that you're accessing the information from someone? And then some women just live in very violent situations where others are trying to control whether or not they get pregnant or whether they have a baby or whether they seek an abortion. And sometimes it can just be dangerous to be seen seeking that information. And so we cannot predict what every individual woman's circumstances are. What we do is try to create the conditions for her to make the best decision possible for herself.
And what are some of the steps on the way to achieving that?
Well, by providing the information widely, sometimes even when the information is prohibited, and I have to honestly say sometimes illegal, because we let women know in states that there's a medical form of abortion, there's a pill form of abortion, even though there are states that say you can't share that information. Well, we still live in a free speech society, so we don't let the conservatives tell us that we can't tell women how to take care of themselves and their bodies. And so we will have clinics, we will have speak outs, we will have all kinds of forums. We'll use everything. We have these conversations at beauty salons. We have them everywhere we can to make sure that women have access to the information that they need.
Tony M. Bond, Leonard, I wonder how often people come up to you when you've discussed the things that you do and they say, oh, those sorts of things don't happen in America. Does that happen often?
Actually, not a whole bunch.
Really?
The women that I encounter many times ask me how can they either get involved with the work that I'm involved in or kind of what the status is of the reproductive justice movement, the work in the reproductive justice movement. I think that many of the women that I encounter also ask me for a lot of resources too. And so I find that I am this walking, talking resource guy. having to always be able to say, well, you know, if you need to find out about reproductive health services, have you checked with this organization? Have you talked with this person? So I think people are certainly feeling the effects of not having full access to the reproductive health services that they need. And my role oftentimes is that of a resource person.
Just making sure.
Can I inject something, Jeff?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
We don't even think about this. I live in the rural South. I live in Atlanta, but I spend a lot of time in the rural South. And a lot of time people walk up to me because if they go to their drugstore to buy condoms, the drugstore person will gossip about them. And so they asked me to send them condoms anonymously so that they don't become a source of gossip in the town for trying to just walk into a drugstore and buy them. In a big city, we wouldn't have that issue. But in a small city, even buying condoms is a problem.
People talk, yeah, indeed. You wrote, Loretta, a few years ago about decriminalizing pregnancy. What do you mean by that?
Well, a lot of times women are punished for the behaviors they exhibit while they're pregnant, whether it's women who decide that they want to have a drink, and then they get told that you're not supposed to drink, that's for the baby, or they decide they want to keep training as an Olympic athlete, and you're told, oh, that's bad for the baby. Those are the milder forms. But right now, we're in such a punitive criminal justice system that if a woman doesn't have a successful pregnancy outcome, a baby who's born totally healthy, free of any outside influences like alcohol or drugs, then she gets arrested for, quote...
Oops. Loretta, you there? Tony, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, we have Tony. I'm not sure what happened to Loretta there. We'll see if we can get her back. I want to ask you, Tony, though, about some of the programs offered. It looks like Black Women for Reproductive Justice has a program that was very similar to the Healthy Love Party developed by Sister Song. It looks like a really interesting concept.
The Safer Sex Educational Experiences Initiative, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was modeled after the Atlanta-based Sister Love Incorporated's Healthy Love Party, and we called them sex workshops. And it was about teaching women about, and women and men, about HIV transmission of HIV, AIDS, and other sexually transmitted infections, prevention and transmission, and also about healthy intimacy alternatives. So how can you enjoy your sexuality and at the same time reduce your risk? We were clear that no method of contraceptive is 100%, but how can you reduce your risk of STI transmission, sexually transmitted infection transmission, and still have this enjoyable and healthy sexuality? And we shared that with women, and as I said, men as well, and trained them on, for instance, how do you put on a condom the proper way? You'd be surprised how many people don't know how to put a condom on. We trained them around understanding their menstrual cycle. Again, be surprised how many women don't know the first day of their menstrual cycle, and that's important information to know, because if you don't know the first day of your menstrual cycle, you don't know when you're ovulating, and you don't know when you're fertile and can become pregnant. And so we trained women to be peer educators, and they would go through a 12-hour, very comprehensive training on reproductive and sexual health, and would become volunteers within the organization and go out and do the trainings for other people. So it was highly successful, and was also working with the Chicago Public School System to have the curriculum within Chicago Public Schools.
Is it as big an issue in city schools like Chicago to try to bring a sex education curriculum in as it seems to be in more rural schools?
Absolutely. Again, you know, don't want to talk about sex in general, but more specifically, they don't want to talk about abortion. So even when we were trying to get our curriculum within the Chicago Public Schools, we reached a point where they were willing to accept it, but wanted us to take out the topic of abortion. And so there were all of these other things that they did not want us to talk about. We could talk about certain aspects of sexuality, but other things they didn't want us to talk about. But, you know, again, abortion was the hot button issue. But yeah, in urban areas, or you know, in the public school systems, it's still just as difficult to have the conversation about reproduction and sexuality.
Reproductive justice is the topic here in the exchange. Tony M. Bond, Leonard, and Loretta Ross are guests here. So, Loretta, you're back on the line, I understand.
I'm back. I don't know why I dropped. Glad to be back.
Okay, good to have you. So I noticed that there's also some outreach through reproductive justice through communities of faith. We just talked about schools. I mean, if you can't find people in school, can't find them in church, I mean, where do you go?
Well, frankly, you have to go where people are. I tend to have these conversations in the most surprising places, while I'm at the grocery store or at the beauty parlor. Sometimes I'm shopping for fabric to make some clothes. I just bring up the conversation because everybody's got plumbing And it's rare that you can have a, you know, you bring up the conversation of someone's internal plumbing and you don't get their attention. And so sometimes I'm very assertive in saying, oh, you know, this is so great, and I just found out about this. The next thing I know, the cashier is listening, everybody's listening. And then sometimes people will bring it up. Someone will be talking about, oh, I'm worried about my daughter. I think she's becoming sexually active. And then so you have to find your opportunities. People will create them. But I have found out that anytime you start talking about the plumbing, you get people's attention.
Oh, really? They will listen. How hard for either of you is it to make the case that there might be fewer abortions if there were better education, better information about sexuality in general?
Well, that's been shown statistically across the world. The more people have access to education, information, and particularly evidence-based sex education, the less likely for unplanned pregnancy and the less need for abortion. But it's very careful how we have to talk about reducing the need for abortion, because a lot of times people use that as a frame to increase the stigma on abortion. Like, you shouldn't have needed an abortion. If you were smart enough to have sex, you shouldn't have, you've been smart enough to use a contraceptive. Well, we don't want to shame and blame women who choose to have abortions. And we don't even shame and blame women who have multiple abortions, because we don't know what was going on in their lives. We don't know their circumstances, whether or not their partner was sabotaging their birth control pills. We don't know. And so we want to reduce the need for abortion, but the way you reduce that is reduce the unplanned pregnancies. That's dealing with, because no one's ever needed an abortion that wasn't pregnant. So let's start with the unplanned pregnancies.
At the session you'll have on Friday, you'll probably be in a room full of largely white faces and people who are relatively well off. These are the people who attend the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. What's the message you can take to them, Tony Bond Leonard, about where to take the message from that room?
Well, I think the misnomer is that reproductive justice isn't for everybody. Mm-hmm. Reproductive justice is for everybody. It wasn't a framework that was created just for black women, but it was a framework that was created by black women. And so, again, that's the beauty of reproductive justice, because we find that, as Loretta said, everybody has plumbing or some type of plumbing. And so, you know, at some point in every individual's lives, there is an issue that may come, there may be an issue that comes up around needing to access some form of reproductive health service, or have, or being confronted with an issue around sexuality.
Okay.
And so
we have to go. I'm sorry, but thank you so much both for joining us. Tony M. Bond Leonard and Loretta Ross will be the co-facilitators at What is Reproductive Justice, Friday at 11 at Carpenter Hall at the Shakespeare Festival. Best of luck. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.